You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Oh, yeah. Here is Guy James. Last day of the year, number 365. I think it's 365. This wasn't leap year, was it? I don't remember whether it was or not. 360-something, okay? And it is the last day of one sorry year. I can't help it. I don't know about you, but it was a sorry, sorry year for myself and for a lot of people, but at least I've got you. Yeah. And my family and everybody's in good health and all that sort of thing, but you know how it goes. You know the story, the economics of the situation, the terrible financial crisis that the country's in, the worry, all of that that's been going on this whole year. Abysmal. A year that I think I'd, for the most part, not everything. Some of you know what I'm talking about. Not everything would I want to forget, but man, it was a year of worry and confrontation and a slug it out election and just upheaval around the world. My God, I'm glad when 2009 is going to trip over tonight the clock. You know, I was just watching one of the news channels just a little while ago, and I see that people are lining up in Times Square already. 9 hours ahead of the ball dropping, and they're lining up there already. It's snowing. It's 20 degrees, and people are actually going to stand there all that time. Now, there was a time when maybe I would understand that, when I lived up north and we were used to the cold weather and the snow and all that, but the thought of standing out in the snow at 20 degrees right now for 9 hours is not appealing to me, but I guess if you got enough liquor in you, enough MD 2020 or Boone's Farm or whatever kind of cheap wine they're making nowadays, I probably dated myself when I said Boone's Farm or MD 2020. Do they still make that stuff? I don't know. I don't know. I haven't had a drink since Election Eve when we did the Ouzo thing on here. Do you remember that? Some of you were around when we had a shot of Ouzo for every state that came in for Obama, and as you well know, that ended up being quite a few states for Obama that night. That was the first time I'd had a drink in, I don't know, maybe 10 years or so. Maybe there was one in there sometime. Not a whole day or anything, just one drink. But I was at this little place in Washington, D.C., a little upstairs restaurant, and I had it was good. Good company and good food and a nice drink and all that. It was great. 866-546-5254. If you'd like to join us today, we would love to have you along with us. I do want to let you know, as one of your favorite TV commentators often says, that at the end, toward the end of this program today, I will have a special comment. Do you know how sometimes maybe you're dreaming or you're sitting and thinking and you have to, well, if you're like me, you better grab a pen and pencil and write some things down or record it, or you'll forget a lot of it. Well, I jumped out of bed at 4:30 this morning because I was laying there awake and many things had come to mind. Some things I wanted to say on the program, some things that I feel are noteworthy for about this year and about the events of this year. And so I popped out of bed at 4:30 this morning, put on the coffee, and came up to my processor and started putting it all down. So I have some special comments at the end of the day today that I hope you'll stick around for. I think you may be interested. Also going to do something a little weird coming up in this first hour, something that you won't hear from Rush Limbaugh, or something you won't hear from Hannity, or even some of the crazy ones like Savage and Glenn Beck and all that. You won't hear that, I don't think. So we'll do something here coming up in the first hour, maybe the first 45 minutes of the program. I don't know, whenever the mood strikes me, and I'm going to have to get the mood in. Speaking of moods, how about that SOB John Bolton? Did any of you hear that comment he made? He was at a function in Canada. I believe it was in Canada, and he was at some sort of a seminar why they would invite John Bolton. You know who I'm talking about, for the former UN ambassador. A man so, his attitude so indicative of that of the Bush administration. He fit right in, and it was not surprising at all that Bush appointed this man, and actually he was a protege of Richard Pearl's and Dick Cheney's. But, to be the United Nations ambassador, a man who didn't even believe in the United Nations, thinks it's a worthless organization, and to go to there and be our representative, I just thought was an insult to the rest of the world. But there he is in this this seminar in Canada the other night. And Mia Farrow, who's a humanitarian activist, and a good one, much like Bono, only she doesn't go out and get as much press for it as Bono does. And I don't know if she does as much as Bono, but and I don't want to judge anybody how they do what they do, humanitarian. But she got up and mentioned about whether or not it was the right thing to do for those of us in our country to get involved in humanitarian efforts around the world. And this is what John Bolton, that SOB John Bolton, said to her.
Now, I recognize that the motives of those who advocate responsibility to protect is well-intentioned. And I respect those who believe in it as a doctrine. And I would simply say this to all of you, and I say it to you with respect. If you want to engage in humanitarian intervention, do it with your own sons and daughters, not with mine.
Here's a man that, when he was in college, did not go to Vietnam. He is an avowed neocon. He did not go to Vietnam. I'm not saying everybody should have gone to Vietnam. But here's a man who didn't go because, well, he was in college, and so he didn't want to go, and he's not going to want you to use his sons and daughters toward any humanitarian events around the world. The man is absolutely indicative of the Bush administration, of Dick Cheney, of George Bush, and he's a disgrace to the United States of America, and I am sorry and I apologize to the rest of the world that he was ever our ambassador to the UN. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us today. The conflict, it's albeit one-sided, in Gaza is still going on today. The Israelis talk about perhaps a ceasefire if the people in Gaza will kowtow to their demands. You see, here's the problem in Gaza and on the West Bank. The Israelis realize that colonialism only works when most of the native people have been exterminated. And that is what Israel is doing. There will never, ever be peace in the region, in that particular region, if an outside influence doesn't come in and enforce it. So says Brzezinski the other day. I couldn't agree with him more. If you look at the history of the situation there, there will never, ever be peace unless one side gets the upper hand and exterminates the other side. We all know that one side is capable of doing that right now. I feel that if the press, if the eyes and ears of the world were banned from seeing what goes on there now, and the Israelis have made every effort to try and make that so, that if that were the case, I believe we would see an extermination there right now. There's no question in my mind. And Nir Rosen of the Guardian wrote an excellent piece on this. And let me just quote just a little bit of it. And he did mention that colonialism only works when most of the native people have been exterminated. But often, he says, as in occupied Algeria, it's the settlers who flee. Eventually, the Palestinians will not be willing to compromise and seek one state for both people. Does the world want to further radicalize them? Well, end quote. It appears to me that is exactly what we are doing. By backing Israel once again, we are inflaming the passions of the people in that region against the United States. Israel is inflaming the passions against them, and of course that translates to us. Every attack on these people in Lebanon and in Gaza Strip, West Bank, wherever it happens to be, the Golan Heights, Shabbat Farms, wherever it has taken place, it has inflamed the populace even more against the United States and against Israel. And it is my opinion there will never, ever be peace in that region unless somebody, namely us, I guess, or the United Nations with a powerful force, a military force, goes in and imposes a very, very strict blockade from one from the other, keep them apart. That's the only thing we're going to do. And to go back to what Nir Rosen said, don't be deceived. The persistence of the Palestinian problem is the main motive for every anti-American militant in the Arab world and beyond. But now the Bush administration has added Iraq and Afghanistan as additional grievances. And America has lost its influences on the Arab masses. Even if it can still apply pressure on Arab regimes, but reformists and elites in the Arab world want nothing to do with America. And this is the important part of what Nir Rosen had to say. As you know, we had him as a guest on the program not so long ago. And I'll get to the phone in a moment. Just hang on, folks. A failed American administration departs. The promise of a Palestinian state a lie. As more Palestinians are murdered, a new president comes to power. But the people of the Middle East have too much bitter experience of U.S. administrations to have any hope for change. President-elect Obama, Vice President-elect Biden, and incoming Secretary of State Hillary Clinton have not demonstrated that their view of the Middle East is at all different from previous administrations. As the world prepares to celebrate a new year, how long before it is once again made to feel the pain of those whose oppression it either ignores or supports? That from Nir Rosen of the Guardian. How do you feel about the situation in Gaza? We'll be talking about that for a bit in the first hour today. Let's go over to the phone. Good afternoon. You're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Sandra. I just wanted to, you know, wish you a happy new year and, you know, love the show for the whole year. It's been wonderful. And I know you're facing these different financial problems. I mean, I hope something comes through because I would hate to lose your voice. Really, it's really disturbing me, actually.
Thank you, Sandra.
Yeah, listen. I listened to your show yesterday, and I thought your interview was, I couldn't even believe it. I just thought, you know what? This is just total madness, and I just feel ashamed, really, because what Israel does, we do, because they use our weapons. You know, it's pretty basic, and even if you want to turn away, you really can't, because we're so, by our own fault, connected so intimately with Israel. And I saw an interesting poll that showed that 71% of Americans think we should take an even-handed look at that, whereas the political class is in lockstep. And it just shows to me that the democracy is really not working very well in the U.S. anymore.
Oh, Sandra, so right you are. You know what the difference is between the 71% and the majority of the political class. And it's called good old American greenbacks. That happens to be the difference.
Yeah, well, and also, though, it's just sort of stunning example of how, we are not being represented anymore. And the Israel example is one, but I can cite other ones. And it's starting to be a prominent theme in our discourse, our demos, or whatever you want to call whatever the hell this is. And it's really not very inspiring to see what Obama is doing. He's saying nothing and using the one president as a time excuse when it's convenient. I don't want to start slamming on him, but this isn't very hopeful to me. This, along with the Warren thing, I mean, it's just sort of, I'm not too sure what's going on, but I'm not very hopeful, and the Israeli thing has really set me back, because that's just straight-up murder.
Plain and simple. And Sandra, I do agree with you. Yes, there is only one president at a time, but he should speak out. I believe he should speak out, and he should have compassion for both sides. I'm not backing Hamas and saying that them lobbing rockets into Israel is a good thing. Of course it is not. But it's a disproportionate response to what has happened, and I believe, and it always is, as it was in Lebanon and has been in other places. And I believe Obama should speak out, and I certainly would be surprised if he and our new State Department would take an even-handed view of this. But you're absolutely dead on. We won't.
Well, no, but the larger picture, though, is what you were alluding to from the Rosen. Was that the person's name?
Yeah, near Rosen.
What it translates to is that, don't come at me with this wide-eyed look when we're attacked again. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
No, leave that out. And that's what's so disturbing, because they won't. They'll use it yet to completely obliterate what's left of our civil I mean, to me, you can look at a big picture of this and see a really dark place, because you can only pound people in the ground like they're doing in Gaza for so long. Demographically, that can't go on forever. And something's going to give. The Israelis, it's nothing to do with religion. It's might. This is a power exercise. I'm sorry. I understand the Hamas thing, but a few rockets lobbed over. In 8 years, you've had 20 Israeli deaths. How many have you had in Palestine?
Oh, yes, yes, and in Lebanon a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's enough of this sort of equilibrium stuff with Israel. We're providing endless weapons for them, so what they do is an extension of us at this point. And if you look at, there's this beautiful quote from Washington in his farewell address when he talks about all this. It's stunning. It's sort of, you think, oh, my God, this is unreal, because he talks about we shouldn't favor other nations and how poisonous that can become. I don't know. If you can read his farewell, see for yourself. It's quite incredible.
Well, if anything, this nation should stand for even-handedness.
But we do. This is what I'm saying. It's not. I mean, the majority of the American citizens can see common sense.
But what the rest of the world sees is our actions, not how you and I feel, the populace feel. They see the actions of the American government, and that's why we are disgraced around the world. That's why we are despised around the world now. We are a pariah. We are looked upon as the most dangerous nation in the world. It's because the actions of our government speak, they walk the walk. And here we are with our voices not being heard in Washington, and I have terrible regrets about that.
Yeah, no. It's just, I don't know. I just am sort of, I'm beyond appalled because it's so obvious. If you look at any other coverage of what's going on there, it's brutal, you know, what they're doing. There is no sort of justification. And I listened to that Netanyahu. He's hideous. Have you heard this man?
He frightens me.
He's leading in the polls. I'm like, oh. So our only solution as Americans is to demand the defunding of Israel. We need to, that's the only control we have, you know, as citizens, is to, you know, demand that we stop arming these people.
Absolutely. As we mentioned yesterday, take their terrible armaments away, bring in a UN force with enough backing to back up a ceasefire and impose one and back it up, and not allow either side to get away with this. Otherwise, this is going to go on. It's gone on almost all of my lifetime, and it's going to go on from now to the end of time if we don't come up with look how many years we've been talking about this.
Oh, no, and it's just sort of, that's why when I heard Obama and his, oh, if rockets were coming into my house where my daughter slept, you know that quote?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I'm thinking, okay, well, if I had 4 decades of occupation and my kids couldn't get medicine, I would do whatever I had to do, too. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, if you had...
You can always come up with an argument like that, and we've decided to support one side. Let's just be honest.
I heard that again yesterday, and I played that quote again of Obama saying that if rockets were being lobbed into my daughter, and this was a couple of hours after hearing Muhammad from Gaza City tell us at that moment live that his family was cowering in a dark room in a dark apartment at 10 or 11 people without electricity, and the bombs were flying. How could you not feel compassion for them as well?
And that's the thing. And it's like, you know, it just sounds almost ridiculous coming from Obama. It's like, I don't know. I don't even know what to say about that kind of quote in the face of, you know, what I see on press TV and any other sort of media I choose to look at. You know what I'm saying?
Well, what is it that you and I and 71% of the people in this country don't understand about the situation that the POLs do? What is it we are missing? I say nothing.
No, I think it's like you said, the money situation and just the gross indifference to democracy, you know, that, you know, and the lie that we are laboring under. I'm sorry to say, Guy, because these sort of things show the state of our democracy, because the majority of people say X policy, yet we're shoved B policy in the face of that. What does that tell you?
Oh, and the outright hypocrisy of the whole thing. We want to plant and foster democracy in that region of the world. Only if it's the kind of democracy we want. Only if it's the people who run this democracy that we want. Otherwise, to hell with your democracy. The people in Lebanon, the people who elected the Hamas officials. I'm sorry, if you've got an election and people have elected people, that's their will.
And not only that, but you can look at the ANC, the IRA, numerous other, quote, terrorist organizations that began to participate in electoral politics and were welcome into the world community. Hello.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I know it's some sort of, you know, faux pas, but Hamas obviously has been closer to the people, not corrupt, like the PLO, which they can't deal with. So they decided to pick this group. The IRA was able to come to some understanding. The ANC did the same thing. So why is it that the Hamas is excluded from this process?
And Sandra, you're so right. And what else would you call the bombing of the King David Hotel?
Oh, we don't mention that.
What was that but an outright terrorist act?
Well, what the hell was Begin before? And God bless him, you know, whatever. They did what they did. God accepted from the world community, and that happened. But don't tell me that other groups who strive for self-determination aren't entitled to the same process. And Hamas, whatever you want to say about them, live closer to the people, and the people wanted them instead. That's the truth. I mean, you can look at Hamas history and see how they operate. It's a lot different from the corrupt Palestinian Authority. You know?
Well, and it goes back to the old thing, let thee without sin cast the first stone. They have lobbed some rockets into Israel, okay? We pass out some blankets with smallpox to the Native Americans. Let's remember all these things.
It's power politics that's going on there, and it's might is right. And for them to sort of throw anti-Semitism or any kind of criticism all of a sudden is some sort of statement that you want Israel to go away, it's a bunch of BS. That is not my stance. I just am looking at what I see with my own eyes, you know?
It is, in fact. And here we are now with 8 years' worth of complete loss. And I'm not just blaming this on the Bush administration, although they've tried for and accomplished nothing in the way of diplomacy in that area of the world. They've achieved nothing. In fact, we've gone backwards, and not many administrations have done anything. Carter did a fairly good job of trying, at least. Clinton made a good try. The Bush administration done virtually nothing except march backwards in that area of the world. Sandra, thanks so much for calling.
Okay.
It's so good to hear from you.
Yeah, but once again, have a nice holiday.
Happy New Year to you.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
I said I was going to do something crazy in the first hour. I don't know if you'll consider this crazy or not, but our good friend Scott from Sweden, you all know him. He's called the show a couple of times, and we correspond by email, and it's always good to hear from Scott when he... I'm trying to think what time it is there now. 8:28 or 9:28 at night, something like that. Anyway, Bob knows about this, that here we are, we have an American president now, and the Americans are so well thought of that when you go to a foreign land over there now, they throw shoes at you, which is the ultimate insult in that part of the world. So having that have happened a couple of weeks ago, and you all know it was big news, and you also, some of you listening, know that... Scott wrote this song and sent it to, and I believe, although I didn't hear it, sorry, Bob, I didn't hear it. I understand that Bob did this song in his show, and I thought, well, I'm going to work it up as well, mainly because Scott sent it, and I thought, what the hell, I'll give it a shot. So here's the song, my apologies to Bob Dylan and to Bob and to Scott for butchering his song and to everybody else, but I'm going to do this, whether you like it or not, and I'll probably be disgraced for the rest of my life. But like I said, Hannity wouldn't do this. Limbaugh wouldn't do this. Nobody would be crazy enough to do this. So just give me a moment here to get my get the old guitar out and all. I don't know how this is going to work with the microphone because I've only got one microphone here, but let's give it a shot.
Come gather, reporters, wherever you sit, and admit that the shoe, it really does fit. Not on your foot, but on that other dumb shit who in front of you blabbeth. Just stand right up and make your pitch. And the socks, they need a changing. Come a Rockies and Yankees to airports you go, you practice removal with little to show. Sept holes in your socks while guards simply smirk at shoes that want of a shining. Next time you see him, just bean that dumb jerk. And the socks, they need a changing. And you who are listening and can't get inside the press room where W so seldom resides, the postal service is at your command for shoes anonymously smelling. Address to Laura's steady right hand, and the socks, they need a changing. So people don't sit there with leather worn out. Zaidi's in prison and we have to shout, free him, oh free him, the man of the day, the George Washington of a new nation. The man is a shoe, and what can else we say? And the socks, they need a change. And the socks, they need a change.
Well, there's a pretty lame attempt to try. It's never going to make the top 10, I don't think. But anyway, we had a little fun with that. And thanks to Scott for sending that along, and thanks for your patience. Hey, we're going to listen to some real singers here coming up right now. Thanks to ELO for this, and we'll be back right after this, a little New Year music.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, Ava. Happy New Year. I hope everybody has a Happy New Year. Got to be better next year. I know some of you are probably sitting there saying, hey, what was wrong with this year? I had a perfectly good year. Well, some of you did, and some of us didn't in some ways. I don't want to leave the subject yet of the Israeli-Gaza situation. We see things with rose-colored glasses. We see things through a filter. We see what our government, the Israeli government, and our media wants us to see. As advanced as we are technologically around the world now with our media capabilities, we still see filtered news for the most part. And so it behooves us to take a look at journalism, real journalism, that takes place in other areas of the world about this story so that we can form an opinion, a complete opinion, by seeing what others are saying besides our very biased media in this situation. Now, published in the leading Israeli English newspaper, Haaretz, Gideon Levy wrote this. Israel, now this is an Israeli, in an Israeli newspaper, and I'm quoting his story. Israel embarked yesterday on yet another unnecessary, ill-fated war. On July 16, 2006, 4 days after the start of the Second Lebanon War, I wrote, every neighborhood has one, a loud-mouthed bully who shouldn't be provoked into anger. Not that the bully's not right. Someone did harm to him. But the reaction, what a reaction. 2.5 years later, these words repeat themselves to our horror with chilling precision. Within the span of a few hours, on a Saturday afternoon, the IDF sowed death and destruction on a scale that the Qassam rockets never approached in all their years. And Operation Cast Lead is only in its infancy. That's what they're calling the operation. Once again, Israel's violent responses, even if there is justification for them, exceed all proportion and cross every red line of humanness, morality, international law, and wisdom. What began in Gaza is a war crime and the foolishness of a country. History's bitter irony. A government that went to a futile war 2 months after its establishment, today nearly everyone acknowledges as much, embarks on another doomed war 2 months before the end of its term. In the interim, the loftiness of peace was on the tip of the tongue of Olmert, a man who uttered some of the most courageous words ever said by a prime minister. The loftiness of peace on the tip of his tongue and two fruitless wars in his sheath. Joining him is his defense minister, Barak, and the leader of the so-called left-wing party, who played the role of senior accomplice to the crime. This from Haaretz, the leading Israeli English newspaper, lest you think that the Israelis, all of them, are going, Yahoo, let's go and kill these people. That is not the case. Once again, the government does not necessarily carry out the will of the people, just as it is here in this country and others as well. Egypt, for example, we have an American puppet government in Egypt. The people, most of the people, rioting in the streets against this action by Israel, but their government supports them because they are a puppet government of the United States. Listen, right is right and wrong is wrong, and you can't change that. Here's another one by an Israeli writer. Abu Salah's family lives in Gaza's Nasir neighborhood. And this reminds me so much of the gentleman we talked to yesterday and his family. And I hope and pray, and as you know, when I ask him at the end of the interview, is there anything we could do for you? Anything we can do to help? And he said, pray for us. Please pray for us. And so I hope that he and his family are today still safe from this onslaught that's taking place. I hope that his meager apartment and the 10 or so family members inside of it have not been bombed or have a missile lobbed into it or been attacked. I tried to get a hold of him today. I could not. But as we hear Amira Haas, another correspondent from Haaretz, say, Abu Salah's family lives in Gaza's Nasser neighborhood, close enough to hear the bombings targeting the home next to that of Hamas Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh and the Shati refugee camp, and close enough to hear the attacks on Haniyeh's office, which also hit the UN building. Salah wants to leave the house, but I didn't let him, Abu Salah said. Who knows what will happen outside? On the other hand, who knows what will happen at home? Folks, these are, for the most part, innocent people. Just trying to live their lives in what little they have. And we've described to you in detail the horrible condition in which they live. Medical supplies are almost non-existent. Food is running out. They have no decent water, no clean water to drink. They have no sewer, functioning sewer system. We have heard yesterday of they're building these sewage lagoons. You know what they're talking about when they talk about a sewage lagoon? Have you seen the lakes at your local sewage plant where the water is treated in one pond and then put into another pond and then put into another pond as is alternately cleaned and then put into a cleaner pond? I used to be on the service committee of a city, so I know about water treatment plants, but we all do. But these sewage lagoons they're talking about is simply taking bulldozers, walling up dirt high enough to hold God knows how many gallons of raw sewage and just pumping it in there, not treating it, just leaving it that way. And we're told that the walls of these sewage lagoons are deteriorating to the point where they may burst and the raw sewage may flood some of the surrounding areas. These are the kind of humanitarian disasters that befall the people in Gaza. And here we are, a mighty nation, allowing this to happen and not doing anything about it. Again, I am not saying that Hamas is right in their actions. I am not saying that. And I'm not even saying that the Israelis have no right to retaliate. Let them. But do it in a proportional way. And then let's remember the humanitarian issues that are at hand. Let us remember that there are 1.5 million people in Gaza who are, for the most part, innocents. Women and children who have had nothing to do with the destructive actions of Hamas. And I'm reminded that the boat with a CNN representative and former U.S. representative, Cynthia McKinney, trying to pull off a humanitarian mission, taking medical supplies into Gaza via the ocean. The boat was rammed by the Israeli Navy, accusing the folks of carrying out terrorist activities. This with a CNN reporter on board and with former United States Congress Representative Cynthia McKinney from Georgia. The boat could have been sunk easily. It limped back in to port. Who knows what would have happened had that boat been sunk by the Israeli nation? We all know that the Israelis have carried out missions against the United States before. I don't want to sound biased in this whole thing, but I am. I do not like to see the bully. And it may sound strange for me saying this. I don't like to see the bully on the block beating up the defenseless ones. Especially since I live in a nation that's been doing some of that on their own in the past few years. And I'm not proud of that. And Eric reminds me, yes, do remember the USS Liberty. Remember what happened with the USS Liberty. Barely an apology. And I am ashamed of my government's response to this whole situation. I'm very ashamed of it. I believe the American people deserve better from their government. I believe the American people are better than this. I believe that the American people expect action on the part of our government to say to Israel, no more. Put a stop to this. You have exacted your revenge. You have warned them not to do this anymore. Sit down and talk. It's a rare exception when weapons settle anything in this world. A very rare exception. Israel at first said that they would have a ceasefire. And instead, they carry on. Who knows? Maybe a ceasefire will come later on today. I do hope so. But it's just time for the American people to speak out and tell our representatives no more. No more will we stand for allowing the bully on the block to carry out these anti-humanitarian actions. Not in my name. Not in my name. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I just hope people do remember that every time one of these attacks takes place, every time someone else gets killed, there's another relative, another family member, another neighbor, another citizen who hates America because of it, because they know that we've sanctioned this. We've not said, yes, go do it, but we haven't said no. And we're losing ground in that area of the world. Anybody that thinks that this false notion of this Bush doctrine of planting democracy in that area of the world, and it will just gloriously spread over the whole area, and everything will be wine and roses from now on, that's a crazy notion. Having done it with weapons, having done it with airplanes and bombs and shelling, and paying for Israeli weapons and our own weapons. Anybody that thinks we've accomplished anything in the way of getting things over, people's opinions over to our side, is a fool. Only a fool would think we've accomplished anything. Our State Department has been silent. Condoleezza Rice has been a waste of time. I don't know why she ever got on an airplane and went over there and talked with anybody. They've only been made to look the fool. Well, I know we've talked a lot about it, and I don't want to overdo it. But when we have an attack like this taking place on a bunch of defenseless people, it merits a response from us. And I do thank those of you who sent emails to me yesterday after we had the guest on and letting me know that they contacted the representatives. That's how we do things. And that's what we encourage on this program. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
When the bells all ring and the horns all blow, and the couples we know are fondly kissing, will I be with you, or will I be among the missing? Maybe it's much too early in the game. Oh, but I thought I'd ask you just the same. What are you doing, New Year's? New Year's Eve. Wonder whose arms will hold you good and exactly 12 o'clock that night, welcoming in the new year, New Year's Eve. Maybe I'm crazy to suppose I'd ever be the chose out of a thousand invitations you receive. Oh, but in case I stand one little chance, here comes the jackpot question in advance. Doing New Year's Eve. Jackpot question in advance. What are you doing, New Year's? New Year's Eve. Oh, what are you doing, New
Ella, what are you doing New Year's Eve? Say, what are you doing New Year's Eve? I would like to know. If you want to give us a call and let us know what you're going to do on New Year's Eve this evening. I've never been a New Year's Eve type guy. I can remember when I was much younger, maybe a couple of New Year's Eve parties or all that, but I've never been one to get terribly excited about New Year's, and usually just stay home. Probably that's what I'll do this evening. Have a good meal at home and just take it easy, kick back, and reflect upon the past year. I don't know if we want to do a lot of reflection on the past year, but however, that's just what we're going to do in the next hour. And as I mentioned once again, I am going to have a special comment at the end of the program today in the last 15 or 20 minutes or so. And so I hope you'll call all your friends and neighbors and have them listen in on that. I feel it's important. And does that sound self-serving? No. My thoughts. And I do want to reflect on the past year. And we'll all do that together here in the next hour, reflect on what's happened in the last year and some of the newsworthy items that's happened that were important. We've been through a tumultuous year. There's no question about that. With the general election, the money that was spent on the election, the time that was spent on the election, the numbers of people involved, the number of voters, the down and dirty end of it, all the candidates that were involved, the Democrats taking the presidency back, gaining many seats in the House. My God, we've still got one of the Senate races going on. It appears that Al Franken has the upper hand against Norm Coleman in Minnesota. And I think today or Friday is the day they've got to wrap it up, and then maybe it's going to go to court. But as of 10 or 11 o'clock this morning, Al Franken still had a 49-vote lead. Imagine that, 49 votes out of millions of votes in the state of Minnesota. So I hope Al Franken can pull that off. Not that I think Al Franken is any great shakes for the United States Senate, but my God, you'd have to be better than Norm Coleman. What is it about Minnesota right now? Michelle Bachmann? Ooh, ooh. And Norm Coleman? So good luck to Al in that one. We hope that one works out. And it does appear, after being behind for a long time in this, and I'm sure they've learned some lessons from the Al Gore defeat, if you want to call it a defeat, I'm sure that the Coleman, or that the Franken team learned some things from what took place when Al Gore was robbed of the presidency in the year 2000. So they're playing hardball up there in Minnesota. And so keep hanging in there, Al. It does look good. We're going to pause for news coming up at the top of the hour. And in the second hour, we're going to take a look back at the year in review, both around the country, around the world, and here on the Guy James Show. And we're going to have special comments coming up toward the end of the program. I hope you'll stick around for that. In the meantime, you are listening to The Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. And we'll be back right after the news. Don't you dare go anywhere.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. A business group called Save Our Secret Ballot is launching state constitutional amendment efforts in at least 5 states to require secret ballot elections in union organizing drives. It's an attempt to thwart the efforts of workers and their unions to pass the Employee Free Choice Act. That labor law reform gives workers the power to choose a union either with an election or through a majority of workers signing government-certified union cards. AFL-CIO's Fred Ascarati.
The difference is today it's up to the boss, the employer, to decide the way the workers form their union, right? We're saying under the Employee Free Choice Act that choice really should be the workers themselves to decide how they want to form their organization to collectively bargain themselves a better life.
Business wants to keep its right to force elections in union organizing campaigns because they can pressure and intimidate workers with strong anti-union campaigns when those elections are used. President-elect Barack Obama and a majority in Congress support the Employee Free Choice Act labor law reform. As Karate says, that the AFL-CIO is optimistic that this reform can be passed in the first year of the Obama administration. A second union has filed suit against the governor of Washington over plans to cap pay raises in the biennial budget. Jesse Russell reports.
A second lawsuit against Washington State Governor Christine Gregoire has been filed over a decision to use a loophole in the state's collective bargaining law to cancel contracted pay raises for state workers. The Service Employees International Union has filed the suit on behalf of home care workers in the state. The original suit was filed by the Washington Federation of State Employees last week. SEIU is asking the state Supreme Court to withdraw the budget proposal as it violates an agreement to a pay raise in the union contract. The governor is out of town and could not respond personally, but the governor's office said in a statement that while the workers deserve the pay raise, due to the global financial market crisis, The state's income has been reduced by $1.9 billion, leaving few options. In a statement, SEIU said it sympathizes with the difficult position the governor is in, but breaking the law and undermining the collective bargaining statute isn't the right way to get there. Here is today's economic report. Jobs with Justice has named the 2008 Grinch of the Year, or maybe we should say Grinches of the Year. Number one is typically a corporation or a single CEO or politician, but this year it is all of the executives on Wall Street who helped bring on the collapse of our national economy with their unfettered greed and lack of regulation. Also receiving nods in the nomination process were Secretary of Labor Elaine Cho, United Airlines, and lobbyist Richard Berman.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, do you hear me? In my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
Your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there, welcome back after the news. Mostly labor news today. Looking at the screen here in the studio, yes, we do have visual aids here in the studio as well. We see what a terrific job the Israeli PR machine is doing. We have pictures of tanks surrounding Gaza. We have pictures of the destruction and the death. And the note down below on the screen says, Israelis are allowing food and medical supplies in today. Well, isn't that sweet? We'll kill you some more as soon as we get that stuff in there. We'll kill some more of you. But we want the world to think we're really good guys, you see. And so here's a little bit of food for you, albeit not enough for 1.5 million people. And, of course, here's some medical supplies, you know, a little penicillin, maybe some aspirin, I don't know what all. But we're going to let a little bit of humanitarian supplies in today so that we look good to the rest of the world. The Israeli PR machine in high gear, as they always are. Hey, folks, we're going to enter a new year here in about in a little less than 8 hours. And I was reflecting back on the past year. And I read on one website that they were voting on the most stupid thing anyone said this year. Now, I can think of a lot of stupid things. I remember John McCain saying the economy's in great shape and, you know, lots of things this past year. But Paulson said some ridiculous things. Bernanke said some ridiculous things. And lots of us have said some ridiculous things. But for some reason, And you know I have an obsession with this. For some reason, I just can't get past Sarah Palin, her statement when she was asked about foreign policy experience. Do you remember that when they asked her about her foreign policy experience? And she said, and let me quote her here now, "You can actually see Russia from land here in Alaska. That was her testimony to her foreign policy experience. So I was thinking about that when it comes to the most stupid thing anyone said this year. So if you can actually see Russia from the land in Alaska, and that qualifies Sarah Palin for having foreign policy experience, does that mean, well, think of it this way. So when I look out my window and I see the moon, that doesn't make me an astronaut now, does it? I don't know. I'm just saying. And, of course, we can't go by this year without talking at least a little bit about the wounded duck, lame duck, whatever you want to call him, that's still in the White House. He's got, thank God, 20 more days in the White House after today. Actually, about 19 and a half because they get rid of him on the 20th. I don't think there'll ever be a more beautiful sight in Washington, D.C. than that man getting on Air Force One for the last time, getting up on top of these stairs there and waving goodbye to everybody and getting the hell out of Washington, D.C. I don't think there'll ever be a more satisfying sight in Washington, D.C. Not when Nixon left, not when Reagan left, not when anybody's left. Will it leave such an everlasting impression in my mind, something that gives me so much satisfaction, as when George Bush and his lovely wife, Laura, get on that plane and their dog, Sparky, or whatever his name is, the one that bites everybody, gets on that plane and gets the hell out of Washington, D.C., and God help us, don't ever let them come back. Don't ever want to see them in that town again. I am sorry, I am ashamed, I am mortified, I do not have enough words to describe, and I should let up on it, right? He's leaving. But we can't let the day go by without at least mentioning Junior Bush, because he's been heavily involved in the year 2008, in the last 8 years. He's really gone from his presidency, if you want to look at it this way, and I do. He's gone from 9/11 to Chapter 11. He ignored the 9/11 warnings when they came and told him that something was up. And then he completely gave up on the things a president should do. Improve the education, work on our economy, try and help to retain some jobs, the deficit, the budget, the general welfare of the people. He became obsessed with his unnecessary war in Iraq, and it absolutely, as we well know now, was completely unnecessary. He virtually gave up on trying to find Osama bin Laden. He totally failed in his obligation to the people affected by Hurricane Katrina, and instead blaming the whole debacle on Governor Blanco, saying she hadn't even asked for help when the record clearly shows she had. And then the economy was collapsing, and he sat by and he did nothing. He had his Herbert Hoover moment. And this is going to be his legacy. His legacy to match that of Herbert Hoover and Warren G. Harding. And as I've mentioned to you many times, I grew up in an area where Warren G. Harding was born and raised and was elected President of the United States. He was the editor of the Marion Star newspaper in Marion County, Ohio. And he was born in a little area right close by called Blooming Grove. And knowing the history of Warren G. Harding as I do, as everybody in that area should well know, all of my adult life, I believed that nobody would ever surpass the disappointment and the shame of Warren G. Harding or Herbert Hoover. And lo and behold, this guy comes along. This is a presidency, just for history's sake, so we can put our mark on it, not his, as he's trying to do. This is a failed presidency that's unmatched in our history. It's marked by corruption, by lies, by incompetence, and complete fiscal mismanagement. We had Hank Paulson along with Bernanke and Bush. They've proven to be the three stooges in this disastrous financial meltdown. Nothing they've done or recommended has worked at all. And Bush's well-known stubbornness has proven to be something that stood in the way of his good judgment time and time again. His unwillingness to change his mind has often led him to make decisions that were to everyone else doomed to failure. And yet he forged ahead with them anyway. And one only need bring up the example of the Bush War in Iraq as a good example. Military people pleaded with him and Rumsfeld to do it their way, the military way. Instead, Bush allowed Rummy to do it his way, and we all know how that turned out. And I say again, you can't trust someone who doesn't believe in government to run a government. You just cannot. And Bush and his lackeys are going right around now trying to rewrite history. And as you well know, if you've watched the news or watched any of the programs, Bush, as is his wont, has not been very forthcoming about his legacy and his accomplishments in office. And he was recently asked, how do you want to be remembered? And what are you most proud of? And his reply that, quote, I came to Washington with a set of values, and I'm leaving with the same set of values, once again, to me anyway, it shows his tendency toward both cliche and stubbornness. But it's worse than that. He's unable to point to any great accomplishments at all. Nothing here at home. On the other hand, we've had Katrina and the economic meltdown. Nothing abroad. The disastrous war in Iraq and Afghanistan and what's going on in the Middle East right now. The problem is, Junior Bush has chosen himself as the point of reference. And therefore, in his mind, he can never fail because the only measure of success is his own. And I want to be fair to Junior Bush. I'm always fair in this program. I didn't know him personally. So he may well have come to Washington as a good man. But we all know him now. And he will most certainly leave Washington as a small man. Oh, my. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us here in the program. 866-546-5254. Speaking of Mr. Bush, we're told that, unlike most presidents, that Junior is not going to be able to cash in on a big book deal anytime soon. They're telling him, his advisors and his lackeys and the people around him, that maybe you just had better hold off a little bit on that, Georgia boy. You see, you're not that popular right now. So maybe a book deal wouldn't be the good thing for you right now. Now, Laura can write a book, and she'll probably get a nice advance, nothing like Hillary Clinton did or nothing like Bill Clinton did, but she'll get a nice advance. And hey, look, they're already rich. When the Clintons left the White House, they had all the Monica Lewinsky legal bills to pay that were in the, I don't know, tens of millions of dollars, and Clinton has made up for it, and he's made a ton of money. Ton of money. And he gets great big speaking fees, and why not? He's a great speaker. He's got charisma. He's got style. and people love him. Now, there are people who do like Junior Bush, and I'm sure he'll get invited with a big speaking fee to places like, the Heritage Foundation or the American Enterprise Institute or some of those places, and he'll get the hefty speaking fees for that, but he'll also get the presidential pension that approaches a couple hundred grand a year. But he's got his family's oil fortune to fall back on. And, of course, there's a matter of all that land in South America. Where was it? Ecuador? A lot of land in South America. Why did they do that? Now, Benny, that's not nice. Benny writes on the chat room, says, I think George should write a book, something to put in his library after they shred all of his papers. Benny, why would they want to, Paraguay, thank you. Why would they want to shred George's paper? Certainly there are no secrets in the Bush administration, are there? Certainly there are nothing about anything that's gone on that we don't know about that hasn't been fully vetted, is there? Oh, yeah, okay, the nukes that Saddam Hussein had. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I forgot about that. The ambassador's wife being outed by the Cheney off. Yeah, I forgot about that. The visit to John Ashcroft's bedside to get him to sign something while he was I forgot. Forgive me, I forgot about that. There are a few things, after all, on second thought, there are a few things that maybe have been a little bit quiet. And by the way, do you think Scooter Libby will get a pardon? Does a bear... Well, never mind. Will Scooter get a complete pardon? I wonder. And, of course... He wouldn't want to write about torture. He could, this administration being experts on the subject. 866-546-5254. But anyway, Bush is going to have... security for the rest of his life by the Secret Service, and I don't disagree with that. And he'll probably be given speeches and get $100,000 to plead peace for him to the right-wing think tanks. But he's got an approval rating below 25%. And so, as I mentioned, they are advising him to hold off on a book deal right now. I know it's a shame because I was waiting with the proverbial bated breath to buy Junior's book just to see if he could write. Would he dare write a book himself? It would have to be something done completely by ghostwriters, would it not? I know some of you agree with me, disagree with me, and you've sent me email arguing with me over the point, and it's fine to have your opinion on that. There are a lot of people who disagree with me about me thinking that Junior Bush is not quite up to par in the old intellect department. But, well, I don't care what you think about him, whether he's done this wrong, that wrong, or whatever. A man could not ascend to the presidency of the United States and be an idiot. Well, to that I can only say the proof is in the pudding. It's the only thing I can say. You've heard him talk. You've heard some of his logic. You've heard some of his great statements. You've seen his actions. If you can see all that and still argue with me about his intellect, why then, that's your right. It's a free country. I don't think Junior Bush will ever have a job in the government again. Of course, he doesn't need a job. And you know, it goes back to even Elliot Spitzer has a post-politics job. He works at his father's New York real estate business, Spitzer Enterprises. Elliot had money already. So we'll see what becomes of Junior Bush now. I don't think, like I said, I don't want to see anything more about him. I just want him to go the hell away and stay away and don't come back. And I do feel that the majority of the American people feel exactly like I do. Hey, you got any extra money laying around? General Motors, this is the first sign that I have seen about a cash infusion into a company doing any good so far to help out the public. Not that they're not looking for a profit for them, for themselves. But if you need a car right now, and if you can afford to buy a car right now, this might be the time to do it. General Motors, which need to sell a hell of a lot of cars and need to sell them fast in order to keep their company afloat, they announced yesterday that it's offering 0% financing on some of their 2008 and 2009 models. Imagine that right now. First sign I've seen of that for a long time. Oh, yes, I've seen a lot of the dealers have rebate schemes and all this sort of thing. But this is the first time a major company has offered anything like this in a while now. The huge automobile giant, General Motors, has already received billions in the loans that the Bush administration, passed on to them. And the GMAC Financial Services, LLC, got $5 billion from the Treasury Department. And so now, here you go. You can go out and buy a Chevrolet Trailblazer, a GMC Envoy, and they own Saab, you know. A friend of mine, that's the old joke, a friend of mine bought a new Saab, and he said that's all he ever did after he bought it. I don't know. He did have a lot of trouble with that car. But the Saab 9.7X Sport Ute vehicle, and new car buyers will also find financing between 0.9% and 5.9% on 36 other GM makes and models through January the 5th. So go out and do your patriotic duty. I know you will. And buy a car from GM, buy a car from Ford, if you can afford it, and get that cheap financing. It's a doggone good time to do it right now. We're going to pause for a break. And imagine this. John yesterday complained that I didn't have the Dixie Chicks for him, and he's not here today. Mm-hmm. Well, all right, John. Anyway, we'll be back in a couple of minutes. This is some old-time stuff. This is when they did New Year's upright.
This is my New Year's resolution. When my mother-in-law begins to yell and shout through the window, I would like to throw her out. But I resolve not to do it. Here is why. I'm afraid of hitting someone passing by. This is my New Year's resolution. While I'm at the movies watching a love scene, and the lady's hat is blocking half the screen, I resolve not to shout, take off that hat. I'll remove it gently with a baseball bat. This is my New Year's resolution. When I take a lovely lady out to eat, and she orders caviar instead of meat, I resolve to let the lady have her fill. And of course I'll also let her pay the bill. This is my New Year's resolution.
Come on, Sir Frederick Dad. Come on, Sir Frederick Dad. Come on.
When I'm sitting with my wifey on a bus, and a dear old lady stands in front of us, I resolve to be a gentleman discreet. I'll politely offer her my wifey seat. This is my New Year's resolution.
Hey, Judge Rock, how about your New Year's resolution?
When my mother says, come in, it's time to eat, and I keep on playing games out in the street, I resolve to rush right home now when I'm cold, 'cause my pop just bought a hairbrush and he's bald. This is my New Year's resolution. Hey, Doodle Fever, how about Professor Beetlebum?
On the
radio this year I hope to score with some funny jokes you've never heard before. I resolve not to tell a corny joke. Hello, what's that? The church burned down. Holy smoke. My ears through revelation.
Spike, how about Spike?
In this coming year, I'm going to be discreet. Have the slickers playing music soft and sweet. I resolve to treat Tchaikovsky tenderly and set his second movement off with TNT.
Oh, yeah, Happy New Year. And we do wish the very happiest New Year for all of you. Hope it's a good one. Hope it's a good one. Spike Jones for you on that one. Some old-time stuff, old-time stuff. Say, a lot of talk today, and I haven't mentioned it at all. I've been a little bit remiss in not mentioning it, but I don't really think it's big news. Roland Burris, the Blagojevich's appointee for the senatorial seat of Barack Obama, it does appear that the Democrats and the Senate will not seat him. And I don't know what that's going to get into. I just don't know. I don't know, still, as I mentioned to you yesterday, if the Senate can carry on about that, because there has been a Supreme Court case concerning Adam Clayton Powell back in, what was it, 1969 or so, that the Supreme Court ruled on. I don't know if it's apples to apples, but it does appear to me that maybe the Senate could be in for legal problems with that. What will happen, and of course now we're seeing races being played into it. The Republicans are trying to have some fun with it, but they're not getting too far with it so far. I saw that on Think Progress, they had a story on there that former Illinois Attorney General Roland Burris has already erected his future grave in a Chicago cemetery. The grave lists his accomplishments and leaves plenty of room above the bench to mention his career in the Senate. Oh, my, there's a picture of it on here on thinkprogress.org. Man, you need to see this. Thinkprogress.org. Fabulous monument to himself. Oh, my God, called the Trailblazer. Got it all ready to go. Oh, it is a dandy. A bench where you can sit down and think for a while you look at his grave and that of his wife, a little mini mausoleum type crypt things. Man, this thing's gorgeous. We should all be so lucky, but there is plenty of room there to inscribe something about a Senate career on, but you need to see that picture. Do head on over there to thinkprogress.org and take a look at that. Wow. Ran across over at Aldernet, our good friends over at Aldernet, ran across what everybody voted was the 10 most awesomely bad moments of the Bush presidency, and I thought I'd just take a moment or two to go through them. The 10th most awesomely bad moment of the Bush presidency, of course, I'd put it a little higher than 10th, was when Bush got reelected. To this day, I am astounded that happened. I don't think I'll ever completely grasp what happened there. I don't know. Is it like America went nuts? The 9th most awesomely bad moment was Alberto Gonzalez's congressional testimony. You remember when he said, I don't recall, about 197 times or something. Actually, it was 64 times. I don't recall. Senator, I don't recall. The 8th awesomely bad moment of the Bush presidency was the North Korean nuclear test. I don't know if I agree with that one. Number seven was Colin Powell's bogus WMD presentation at the UN. Now, there you go. That was an awesomely bad moment. When Colin Powell sat there and swore an oath that he was going to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and was talking about the aluminum tubes and the weapons labs and the nuclear weapons program, and he knew he was misleading them. He knew it. I knew it. You knew it. So many of us knew it, and yet so many people were taken in by that. I've yet to understand that completely. How after hearing from Mohammed Al-Baradei on this program and Scott Ritter on this program, people who were in charge of such things looking for nukes in Iraq, people who knew damn well there were no nukes in Iraq, that the program had been dismantled years before, after hearing them talk on this very program, to go before the United Nations and swear that they had nukes, I thought that took a hell of a lot of nerve. So that was one of the that was the seventh most awesomely bad moment of the Bush presidency. And I don't really agree with this one. Number six was the Terry Schiavo affair. Now, with all due respect to Terry Schiavo, it was a tragic situation for that family. But the way the politicians took off and ran with that thing was just staggering. Just absolutely staggering. We had, remember, Bill Frist got in on that and said Terry had been misdiagnosed, that he'd watched a video of her in his office and she'd been misdiagnosed. And we had Tom, what's his name, from Texas getting involved in it. That was quite a spectacle. Number five, Bush and Condi's excellent Gaza adventure. Well, you all remember that. Number four, Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. Now, I agree that was one hell of a bad moment for the Bush presidency. Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. Here we had the whole area literally falling apart. We had a disaster of epic proportions in New Orleans and the immediate area. And the FEMA people were completely, utterly unprepared. Had no idea that the levees were going to break and overflow. Bush was out of town, I don't know, playing guitar with John McCain or something on his birthday. Michael Chertoff completely mishandled the whole thing. It was a disaster, and the federal government's role in it, you can blame the state people and the city people all you want to, but the federal government also had a role in that. They had a big role in that, and they completely screwed up their obligations to the people of that area. And no, Jeff Gannon isn't on the list. Yeah. All right. Number three, the most awesomely bad moments of the Bush presidency is the Abu Ghraib disaster. I don't know when there's been a more heinous embarrassment to the people of the United States than that. The pictures that came out when they said, oh, it was just a few bad apples, just a few bad apples, that's all it was. Turns out it was far more than that. But of course, some of the underlings took the blame for it. We knew that the torture and the humiliation was going on in the highest levels of our government. We knew it had been sanctioned by the Bush administration. Finally, our esteemed Vice President Darth Cheney has admitted so. And I suppose we have to include Guantanamo Bay in on that. Senior Bush administration officials approved it. A horrible black eye to the United States of America. Terrible. The second one of the most awesomely bad moments of the Bush presidency was 9/11. There's an example where I don't agree. I think that was the worst moment. There's an example where the CIA comes in to give him his daily briefing, hands him information that says, you know, they might attack. Osama bin Laden might attack. They might use airplanes as weapons. And Bush looks at him and says, okay, you've done your duty. Get out of here. I believe while he was at his ranch in Crawford, Texas, the beautiful, scenic, lush garden of Crawford, Texas. So, that was a bad moment. And, of course, they've got listed as number one, mission accomplished. Yeah, that was a pretty bad moment for a president. Pretty bad. I'm not so sure it's number one in my mind, but it was a awesomely bad moment. Mission accomplished. Nothing had been accomplished. Nothing of any great consequence, positive consequence, has been accomplished yet. The Iraqi people's infrastructure is still a mess. There's been graft and corruption. The unemployment is high. The people are suffering. They've got a puppet government. And they've even got a puppet government that broke with Bush on the Gaza situation. Yes, did you know? Our great ally, the government of Iraq, that Bush has been claiming that, oh, they're our allies against terrorism. Did you know that the Iraqis have condemned the Israeli attacks on Gaza and broken with the Bush administration on that issue? Our great allies that Bush has talked about all along, about how we fostered democracy in that area, and now we have our friends there. Friends, my ass. I had to have a drink of water. Well, I said I was going to have a special comment for today, and I'd like to do that right now. I don't often do this on the program, but I felt obliged to do it today in light of this year that we've been just through. And 2009 will arrive at midnight tonight. And my question to you is, are you prepared for the change that it will bring? Or are you content to live the same old, same old? It's a serious question for the serious challenges that we face right now. We've been talking about change for some time now in this program and in political circles, and I guess my question is, can we achieve real change? Not change back, but change forward. Can we become leaner, greener, smarter, smaller, more psychologically ready to face the reality of the limits of Mother Earth? Can we create millions of new jobs, sustainable jobs, in the green zone? New technology, some that hasn't even been thought of yet. And most of all, a desire to make sure that the world is brought along on this journey of ours, our new journey to a decent, productive, healthy life for everyone. For we are our brother's keeper. And we must never forget that. We owe it to all of our fellow men to see that this earth is without famine and without war. And I know that it seems to be the human condition, and has been since life crawled out of the primordial ooze. But it can be changed, and we can lead the way. We must lead the way. Or surely life on this planet will perish because of our failure to recognize that we're in this together on this tiny little planet. And as Ben Franklin said, we can all hang together or we can hang separately. Now, I know a lot of people. I make it my business to know a lot of people so I can talk to them and find out what makes our society tick, particularly right now, in this time of great trouble that we're in. Some seek to deny the problems that we're having. Some want to give us the old pull yourselves up with your bootstraps line to people who don't even have any boots. We have people who deny that we have a health care crisis in this country. They deny that we're headed for perhaps some terrible social problems because of poverty, hunger, loss of jobs, and the problems that go along with those things. They deny that we need to radically change our society and our way of life. They want to go back to the way things were before this financial crisis began. They want to look back. In this case, we cannot look back. Things can never be the same in this nation, or we will fall and we will fail. We need to understand that. And our new president needs to make that his mission, that we understand that. Don't look back on what we were, but rather ahead to what we can be if we put our minds to it. We don't need to have a society where we've got two gas guzzlers in every garage. We don't need to waste Mother Nature's resources the way we have been doing for so many years now. We will change our wasteful ways, or we'll perish. It's that simple. We don't need a new flat-screen TV in every room so that the family can split up and watch four separate programs. What's the good in that? My big old tube television broke and can't afford a new one, so what? I'm finding that I really don't need it after all. New jobs. Green jobs. Jobs that benefit all of humanity instead of our insatiable desire for useless consumer goods that in the end do nothing positive for us except waste our precious resources. We've got to get away from being a consumer society. We tried it and it did not work and it can't be sustained. And we've got to get past thinking only of the here and the now. We've proven that doesn't work either. We need vision, the kind of vision that George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and Franklin Roosevelt and John F. Kennedy gave us. A map to the future is what we need now, not a roadmap back to the mistakes which got us in this mess in the first place. Now, I know that many of you are suffering terribly, some worse than others. People who have serious medical problems, who can't afford the care that they need so that their conditions just needlessly deteriorate. Something that in a decent, caring society just shouldn't happen. When health issues come up, the last thing the afflicted and their loved ones should have to worry about is the cost of it. The very first thing that we all owe one another is decent health care for everyone. And I know families who have a car that needs work, with bald tires and hopefully maybe enough gas in the tank to go out for a few job interviews before another few dollars come into the household. The pantry's bare. The bank account's long gone. The unemployment benefits have lapsed, and the best meal of the week is the store-brand macaroni and cheese. I know these families. Lots of them. And they're hurting. What do? They can't sell their homes. They can't find a job. They can't even make a decent enough paycheck to pay their meager bills. And I know families that, because of the conditions, have maxed out their credit card just to pay for the necessities of the household. They didn't want to do that, but it was the only way they could survive the moment. And now they've got those bills to face as well. The charitable food banks are empty. Government assistance, except for Wall Street and other fat cats, is non-existent. They're losing their homes. Where do they go for help? When jobs just aren't available, what will they do? The children, the education. I see people in my area of the country having garage sales right now. The weather's nice and it's a good time to have one. But this year, the few that have bothered to go see are a lot different than in the past. People are not selling the junk they've accumulated in their closets and garages. They're now selling off their furniture and personal items that might bring in a few dollars. selling off the family treasures, as it were. What's next? The numbers of homeless are rising, the numbers entering poverty are rising, and there seems to be no end in sight. There has to be a way out of this, and we'd better figure it out soon, because for a while things are going to get worse, much worse. Eventually, we'll see the proverbial light at the end of the tunnel, but that day is right now, not foreseeable. But it will happen. And I could fill you with useless platitudes like it's always darkest before the dawn and there's a silver lining to every cloud and other such phrases, but that won't do the job right now. What we need is a good old-fashioned attitude of love thy neighbor, and I am my brother's keeper. If you're eating beans and your neighbor's having ketchup soup for dinner, then share your beans. A little bit of the 60s and 70s communal life in neighborhoods all over America wouldn't be so bad right now. Caring and sharing for each other for a change instead of the me, me, me that we've been taught by the greedy right-wing friends like Ronald Reagan and his neocon protégés who've prospered to the max by stealing every dollar they could from the average working middle and poor class Americans. Old-fashioned greed and usury and avarice. These have been the way of life for many in this country, and we are now finally getting a good look of where that path has led. It's led to untold wealth for a very few, and a let-them-eat-cake attitude toward the rest of us. It's a morally bankrupt way of life, and I can only hope that they will pay dearly for it someday. But this isn't about them today, it's about us. Us. Not me, us, all of us. Many of us carry the chains of Jacob Marley, forged from the sins of our past lives. And even though you may not be a person of faith, you should believe there is a cost for our behavior in this life. And removing the links in those chains should be a goal for all of us to aim for. Yes, you must survive and provide for your family. However, consider if you wish to survive by the suffering of others. Real change starts with the individuals. The individuals who choose to participate in a society bereft of ethical guidelines, dedicating themselves to following the guidance of their own conscience. All I'm asking for all of you to commit to in the year 2009 is to help one another. Help feed the hungry. Help take care of those who need care. Share what you have, even if you have so little, as is the condition of so many of us right now. Find the hardships in your neighborhood and do whatever you can to help. And if you will do this, you will find that you will form bonds and friendships that will be stronger than any you've ever had before. And I say this because loving and caring for your fellow man is absolutely the highest calling one can have in this life. And deep in their hearts, everyone knows that. Yesterday, I was having a woe-is-me day. That is, until I called the gentleman Muhammad in Gaza City. I listened to him tell about the horror of what he and his family and his neighborhood are going through. I heard him tell about not having enough food for infants and his elderly parents. I heard him tell of living through paralyzing fear day and night. Fear for the lives of his children, his wife, and his extended family, all of whom are guilty of nothing more than wanting to live and love in their homeland. And while I was speaking to him, my woe-is-me attitude quickly went away, and I started to think, what can I do to make things better? Not just for this man and his family, but for others as well. Like many of you, I've had to live a very frugal life these past few years, and it hasn't been easy. But I have not done enough for others. And I pledge to do better. I well remember an old hymn from my childhood and my adolescence being brought up in the church, the words of which have always struck with me, although at times I've not heeded them. It's called Others, and some of you know it. Others, Lord, yes, others. Let this my motto be, that I might live for others, so I might live like thee. I pledge to do better in 2009. What about you? I hope you'll join me. I do want to thank you so much for helping to support the program this year and all the years that we've been on. As we've mentioned, we are going through difficult times ourselves with the program right now, and I do want to thank everybody that has responded to our notification of that. I want to thank the audience. Without you, we wouldn't have this show. There would be no need for it. And I enjoy your camaraderie on the chat room, your many emails, your phone calls. We have a community, not a huge community, but we have a community, and we get together and commiserate and talk and share our thoughts and prayers with one another and our exasperation at times. And the Head On Radio Network is kind of the glue that holds all this together, and I want to thank Bob and Agnes and everybody affiliated with Head On. I want to thank Elo and all the folks that moderate the chat room. It's been a very difficult year, but in some ways it's been a satisfying year, knowing that you are there when we come on with our show during the day. So thank you once again for joining us here on the Head On Radio Network. And I'd like to close out the program by saying a very happy new year to all of you. I hope you have the best year ever coming up, and we'll share a good old-fashioned song with you. Happy New Year, everybody, from the Guy James Show.